now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today is time to celebrate. No, it's not someone's birthday again, but goals. How do we celebrate them? Should you go for it or be a bit more reserved? Is mockery all good or just plain rude? We'll also be talking Chelsea, Jesse Lingard and cooling off periods, and joining me, Tom Clark, to discuss all of that. We have the chief correspondent for The Times and Sunday Times, Martin Samuel, a former footballer who was fond of a simple celebration, hands in the air with a big beaming grin, and he's smiling again today, it's Tony Cascarino, and another former footballer who, in the only picture I could find of him celebrating a goal on the internet, he's shouting in euphoria with a clenched fist as his Nottingham Forest side beat QPR. It's Mr. Chuckles himself, it's Gregor Robertson. Good goal, that. Johan Folley, apparently, for Nottingham Forest against QPR.
Yeah, FA Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, you are absolutely buzzing. The haircut is bad, though.
The haircut's awful, yeah.
Yeah, bit of a mullet. Yeah.
They were in there, weren't they?
The early noughties mullet, yeah, I had one myself as a teenager. Anyway, with one man with a reason to celebrate, chaps, Mauricio Pochettino. He'd listened to us on Monday's show, given an absolute coating for how rubbish his side are. Then he'd read Martin Samuel's column on Tuesday saying, watch out, boys, you're only getting worse. And he got into his team and he said, look, these chumps at the Times think we're rubbish. You need to go out there against Aston Villa and show them what for. And they did. They turned it around, Martin.
Yeah, they did. No, they did. They played very well. Very well. They had one of their one good games in over many years. But that's where they need to be all the time.
Yeah.
With the money they've invested, that's where they need to be all the time.
What was good about it? You know, all jokes aside, like what did you
what
see?
What was good about it was that the two midfield players looked like a cohesive midfield again, Caicedo and Fernandes. They looked very good. What, you know, they scored early-ish, which Chelsea need. You know, we've all seen the stats about XG and everything, and whether you're greatly invested in XG or not, expected goals. There was this statistic knocking around that if Chelsea had a finisher, they would be 6 places higher up the table. So that stuff went right. He dropped Thiago Silva. Now, whether that's temporary or whether that is the future, Thiago Silva has been a bit of a problem this season, because he's gone from being their most reliable defender, who happens to be 39, to looking like a 39-year-old defender, which he wasn't the case before. Everybody, particularly at the back, there often seems to be a season where someone is now inexorably on the way down, and this would appear to be the season too far, perhaps, at the very highest level for Thiago Silva. So he removed him from the team, and it all came good, and that's, you know, there was good performances. Gusto and people like that played well, but they have done this before. There's been games where you've seen Gusto and thought, there's a player there. He's a player, and seen individual performances from players that you think, yeah, this is it. This is now, if they can get this together, on they go. So now they've got to get it together. They've got to get it together on the weekend.
Monday they've got Crystal Palace. They're at Crystal Palace. Yeah. And then they've got Manchester City the Saturday after. Tony, obviously you've been very critical of your former club, and rightly so, given their poor performances. But they are in the final of the Carabao Cup, of course, and they're now progressing in the FA Cup. Are the Cups enough for Poch this season?
Well, it would be this year, because what we've seen is a mess.
Do you think he has to win one, though?
Well, when you're in the final, look, Chelsea's a football club, has been a club, the expectation is winning. I mean, Poch keeps telling everybody, you know, you've got to forget the past. This is different. Well, they spent £1 billion. You know, you can't really forget it that easy. You expect it to challenge. You know, why was the money spent? It was to keep up with everybody else. It's a difficult one with Chelsea because we haven't seen that performance of 90 minutes all season. I was shocked. You go on previous results, you look at, you know, what they were last week against Liverpool and Wolves, and then you look at Villa at Sheffield United, and yes, they played the team at the bottom and won 5-0 and took them to the cleaners. And then Villa play like Chelsea, and Chelsea played like Villa. Mm-hmm. And it was a really weird... I mean, how do you predict football? No, how do you really predict that result and that performance last night? We know we talked about expected goals. What, three great finishes?
Yeah.
You know, Conor Gallagher, he hasn't done that all season with Chelsea. He hasn't got a Premier League goal. He's scored goals in the Cup, but he's generally a good finisher, and that's been at Crystal Palace. Jackson's header, good finish, free kick. You know, Fernandes, another great effort. You know, I think there's a lot of answers still to be made by Chelsea. That was a very convincing performance that we just haven't seen. It's hard to explain. It's like saying to someone, no, no, explain water. What does water taste like? Did you try and explain what water tastes like?
Honestly,
tastes like water.
I thought Alison Rudd's fox analogy on Monday was good, and now we've got Tony Cascarino's philosophy about water.
I bought some powdered water once, but I didn't know what to add.
Yeah. Oh dear, very good.
Yeah. Almost Stephen as good. Light joke.
Almost as good.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like
mainstream.
No, it's certainly
trying
very
to
confusing.
Explain that last night because I'm watching it and I'm thinking. Madueke was terrific up against Moreno. He was giving him an absolute roasting. Then you see Jackson on the left and you're thinking, all he's doing is really running that right, like the left side, just running and making space for other players. And it felt like, I mean, the midfield three looks a three to me. I do think Gallagher, Fernandes and Caicedo, who I said to you the other day, we were chatting, he missed the pre-season. He was nowhere near fit enough and he's paid the price for that all year.
Yeah. Greg, I just want to finish with Villa. This is a disappointment for them.
I can't say something about Chelsea first, sorry.
No. You say enough about Chelsea all the bloody time. You're always slagging them off. Unless you've got something nice to say.
You've got something nice to say. You take Thiago Silva out of the team and their average age was 22.8. So that I think that really probably is how you explain it. They've gone too soon. Yeah. We've been saying it for a long time. And sometimes they can have these nights and it's like they all flourish and few take big steps, but the point that Martin and I've made in recent weeks as well is about consistency, and fortunately that's not something that's associated with a team full of very young players.
No.
So, you know, Gusto played better than we've seen in a long time. Barry Shealy did as well. It, looking like they've got two mobile centre-halves transforms the sort of feeling at the back. But he's had some howlers for goals in recent weeks as well. So it's about consistency, and I think that's why you hear Pochettino keep saying, I need time.
Yeah. You can make the argument as well, say, like Jackson, where they moved him into a wider position or whatever. In some way, that takes a little bit of pressure off him. I can remember...
Freed up Chilwell as well.
Yeah, I can remember... I can remember Venables doing it with Alan Smith at Leeds because he wasn't scoring and he thought it was weighing on him too heavily being played down the middle. And he moved him to a wide position. And his logic being that suddenly, if you can get six or seven goals from a wide position, that's a good return for a winger. That's a, you know, six or seven goals from your centre forward is no good. Move him to a wide position. Then he starts, you know, the pressure is not on him as much. Then if he starts scoring again, then he gets more confident. Then you're moving back into a central position. It's interesting that Alan Smith finished up as a midfield player. He didn't finish up as a forward. You know, I'm not saying Nicholas Jackson is a midfield player, but at the same time, that little adjustments like that might come from in the end if Jackson is feeling the pressure of being the goal scorer and everyone's saying how many goals he misses or whatever. From a wider position, that takes a little bit of the edge off. He can still get forward, he can still get into goal scoring positions, but everyone's not screaming at him all the time.
It's sort of Rashford as well, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Sort of thing, that line of thinking.
Yeah. You play him wide to build his confidence back up because the expectation isn't as high.
Can I ask you a question about Villa?
You can, sorry.
Are you sure? Are you sure?
Yeah.
You definitely do. Okay, good. Aston Villa, Gregor. A little bit disappointing for them this season, given how well they've been playing. They were a team that we picked out earlier in the season when we were talking about, oh, ideally, who would we like to win the FA Cup? Is the pressure on Unai Emery now to get a top four finish?
I don't think so. I don't think you can say there's pressure on them to do it. It would be a miraculous achievement if they did. And they've still got a good chance of doing so. They're still in a good position in the league. Yes, they've had a little blip here, but, you know, they absolutely trounced Sheffield United the weekend. And I think, I don't know, possibly they're just, their standards just dropped a little bit. There's a different atmosphere around the cup game as well, and Chelsea were clearly bruised badly by recent results. So, and as Martin said, I think it really was important, the two early goals. It sort of, the confidence that it gives Chelsea and the way that, you know, changes the game state just... You know, it set the tone, and Villa struggled to get a foothold in the game after that.
Still a season to celebrate for Aston Villa.
Well, you know, we'll see.
That was going to be my link to my next thing.
Yeah, I know, but
I'll say it again.
You know,
in 2 minutes.
No, you can say it as much as you like. I'm still coming in with this point. But what you got to remember with Aston Villa, we're now talking about, oh, have they got to finish in the Champions League? Have they got to do this? Have they got to do that? It would be a great season for Aston Villa if they won the Conference League. If you've got to remember where they were at the start of the season. When the season began, you looked at Aston Villa's season and thought, right, West Ham won the Conference League last year. Aston Villa could win the UEFA Conference League. That would be a fantastic night for their supporters. It would be a great achievement for the club. It would be a European trophy. It would get them into the Europa League next season. It could still be a fantastic season for Aston Villa fans. Whether they end up in the Champions League or not, they could come fifth, they could come sixth. If they could win the Conference League, which is now the last competition, the cup competition that they're in, this would go down as one of Aston Villa's best seasons in the last 20, 30 years.
Of course, got an 8-point cushion over United in sixth right now. Two over Tottenham, so it's like they're in a good position.
A cause for celebration, you might say. Come on, someone team it up. For goodness sake, you know where we're going. I've said it in the intro. Let's get into it. The Neil Mopay conundrum, I think we can call this section, because he's definitely sparked this debate, hasn't he? But I wanted to bring another set of players into it, because, Martin, you highlighted another celebration in your column this week. Not just Neil Mopay and James Maddison and Neil Mopay against Manchester City, but there was another incident that I wanted you to just bring to the listeners' attention before we debate it.
It was only something that I noticed. It was something that Alejandro Garnacho did against West Ham, where he sort of mimicked that Mohamed Kudus celebration, where he sits on the advertising hoarding and waits for his teammates to join him. And people have said, oh, it's a Ronaldo celebration and it's his tribute to Ronaldo. But he hasn't done it so far, but he did it against West Ham. And it was, but, you know, Kudus was on the other team. And I just think it's just a little something with Garnacho, that when he was a fantastic player. He's their best forward this season, you know, undoubtedly, I think. And yet, a couple of times when United have scored, when they've celebrated, he's felt the need to, like, stick it to the opposing fans or to, you know... And you just think, mate, let the game play out. Because when he did it, you know, when he stuck it to the fans in Copenhagen, when United got quite a soft penalty, Copenhagen then went up the other end and got an equally soft penalty and then ended up winning the game. And you're thinking, you know, went a bit too early. Galatasaray, they go 2-0 up and he's in, you know, you're in Istanbul. Just don't do anything to antagonise the situation. And you just think, mate, look, I'm not the celebration police, you know, do what you like, try and keep your trousers on. But the you know, but that one you're just thinking, mate, don't rub it into the opposition. Because, you know, it's a long old career. And there is going to be a moment. I'm thinking of John Aldrich ruffling the Nottingham Forest player. That was it, Hall, I want to say, ruffling his hair in the League Cup final when a guy kicked it in his own net. And then a little while later, it's Aldrich that misses the penalty in a final and stuff like that. And you think, it's a long old career here for things to come around and stuff like that. Play nice, play. You know, I'm not saying don't celebrate. I can't stand all that shushing the crowd and, you know, what's my name and all that nonsense.
We'll get into that in a minute.
A lot of joy, but play nice.
We'll get into what celebrations we do and don't like in a minute. But Tony, I wanted to then talk about your column from earlier in the week, talking about Neil Mopé's antics and saying that they're part of the game. But you did have a jibe in your career that you regretted, in the spirit of what Martin was saying about maybe think before you speak
so
or
repeat
act.
A note on.
So tell us, tell the listeners.
You're
about
talking of the story in the limo.
Talking about the one that you mentioned in the column further down, when you're talking about playing for Aston Villa, playing against a lower league side.
Oh yes, sorry, because I mentioned a few when I was.
You can tell us about the limo in a minute.
Years gone by, you would always, the money one was the one.
Yeah.
Have you ever played against the lower league, or you were in the lower league team like I played for Gillingham against Spurs? Money was the one that was always thrown at you. How much you want to win.
Between players.
Between players on the pitch. It was always the money one. That was the original sort of sledging that went on. Well, I then done it when I was playing for Villa, and I've said to another day, another dollar to a player on the, I think it was Walsall we were playing at the time. And then I've gone, oh no, it's another day, another grand. I just signed a contract for $7,000 a week. And I've just repeated and gone, another day, another grand.
Just back at
and it. But I immediately felt I was him.
Like a Muppet.
Yeah, I felt so bad because I felt, what am I doing? I was the League One player before.
And
having that, and then I've just, and I remember thinking, I think it was Paul Miller who said it to me, something on the pitch one day playing for Spurs about money. And I remember thinking, you big time Charlie, do that. And then I've done that. I've done that jibe and I instantly regretted it. I felt, what an idiot, what am I doing?
What was the one in the limo then?
The one in the limo is when, we were at Chelsea, and Chelsea at that time had Vinnie Jones, Dennis Wyatt, Andy Townsend, Dave Bessel, and many, many others. We had Kerry Dixon, quite a lively bunch of lads. And
none of them goes to Flash at all.
We're going to Canada. So we're going to Vancouver on a flight, and we're all at Heathrow. And on the flight, Dundee United are on the flight. Okay.
Where are you going to Canada? Pre-season?
It was a mid-season tour, we played a game out there. And Dundee United were... So the lads are on there. Dundee United are on the back and all that.
Anyway, so you're in the fancy seat?
Yeah, well, no, we're in the premium economy. But the Dundee United were, even that was star treatment then. But anyway, we arrive in Vancouver, we get our bags, and we now learn, as we're getting our bags, we're getting on the same bus as the Dundee United players.
Right.
So I think it was Vinny who led it, but they did it anyway. We ain't getting on the bus with him. We'll get a limo. And Ian Portfield, the manager at the time, was okay. We said, Gaffer, we're going to get a limo. Is that okay? And he went, yeah, he thought it was funny. So he just said, we're going to get a limo. So we got this limo that drove alongside the bus. And we're playing cards and we're out the window and we're looking at the lads and we're going, put your foot down, slowing down, going past the limo. And we could see the Dundee United players with half the Chelsea squad because there was about five or six of us in his limo. And we're having the drinks and whatever. And I've got there, and it was very funny at the time, but I get to the hotel, and one of the coaches at Dundee United and went, that was good, wasn't it? And I went, he went, well, it was a bit weird, he said, because a lot of lads were thinking, you were shit at Celtic. He said, thinking, what's he giving it the large one? But they killed me. He's absolutely killed me. And I thought, fair point. Yeah, it was just a...
Good put down, though. I'll give him that one. It's a good slow build.
You never know who or what you're up against. I mean, this is nothing to do with goal celebrations, but there was a press conference with England once, and I hope nobody mind me telling this story, but I'm going to tell it anyway.
We'll find out after you've told
it. We'll find out afterwards when we get sued by everybody. But there's a press conference with England, and it was David Beckham's press conference, and he had just... come second in the European Football of the Year or something like that. Well, it wasn't the Ballon d'Or, but I think it was the European Football of the Year. It was the same week or a week after Victoria just released her first single, and it had got to number two. It hadn't made number one.
Great and tune, Rob Shepherd, Dean Bowers.
Rob Shepherd has written an intro about the European Football of the Year. Along the lines of, he probably wrote it a lot better than I'm going to say it, but it was a very clever intro. He said, you know, David Beckham, just like his missus, can't get the number one without the rest of the team. Which which David has taken sort of personally as if he's having a dig at Victoria, which he wasn't at all. It was just a joke about him coming number two, she was number two or whatever. So at the end of the press conference, he's done the press conference with England, and he said, Shep, he said, you know, I didn't appreciate what you said about Victoria. So Shep's gone up, David. It was a joke. It was just a joke, nothing about Victoria. He said, no. He said, how many number ones has anyone in your family ever had? Now, the thing is, anybody else in that room, he could have said that too. Yeah. And you're going to win. Yeah. You're going to win. Rob Shepherd's sister, stepsister, was a session singer. She's the female voice on Video Killed the Radio Star. So he said it to the one person in the room who can turn around and say, well, one actually.
Yeah. No.
Guess my sister sung Video Killed the Radio Star.
Another.
Absolutely. Kills it stone dead.
Another cracking put down. But I want to come back. I want to come back to celebrations though, because we're talking about kind of, you know, winding people up and things. Celebration-wise, Kaz, I was looking at pictures, as I was saying in the intro. I think you've got good grounds to sue Alan Shearer when you look at your celebrations. You were way ahead of him with the old hand in the air, yeah. Sometimes the two hands in the air, little grin. You just kept it simple, and then he came along and nicked it, and now everyone thinks it was his.
Well, when you've done it 267 times,
oh, you're we're right in it now.
No, I didn't. I wasn't very elaborate in the way. I just...
You want a breather.
getting goals, and it was really weird, because when you remember the description as, you know, scoring goals is better than having sex, you know, yeah. That. I always say, it's not. It's more like masturbation. It's a great relief. I found goals was a relief. You know, as in scoring, and you know, you're under pressure as a forward to get goals. And
do you remember when I was trying to hurry you up through your Aston Villa chat? This is why, you see, I knew it'd be good gear.
Yeah.
Anyway, but no, I wanted to. Anyway, right, Gregor, how do you follow that? I know you didn't score many goals in your time.
But so I was the opposite, Tony. I would run around
a lunatic. Because you did score from a corner.
Bambi.
Direct from a corner once, didn't you?
I did, yeah. That was a shock. I did the same, I think.
Yeah.
Charging around. People gave up chasing me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did either of you ever play in dressing rooms where there was like a thought through? Because the kind of thing we're talking about now, you know, Mope, and you know, they're kind of, they're almost like trademark celebrations.
I would have loved to have Mope in my team.
Mm. Oh, no, but why? Because of his celebrations or because he's a wind-up merchant?
Because he's a wind-up merchant, but the celebrations is part of it.
Yeah.
He did it with the dart throwing against Spurs.
Mm.
Like, I played with one player. I won't say who it was, but he was like similar to this.
He would
do anything to antagonise the team, the fans, anyone. Like, and it's great.
Yeah.
And the thing that happened, you know, clearly now we're talking about, was he doing it at the right time? Because he did it early against Spurs and
I got beat.
Which is Martin's point about you got a time.
I mean, look, Garnacho, and Garnacho was a sort of harmless thing. It was just something I noticed. I wouldn't have even mentioned it or noticed it had it not been for the Copenhagen and Galatasaray ones as well, where you're thinking, you know, he's got this habit of trying to
kick everyone else
when he scores. And, you know, it's...
It was a really interesting point, though, because in the column you make the point that a lot of people missed it because the actual visual was of Mainoo, Hoyland. And as I say, as an editor, I saw it and went, what a great picture. That's Manchester United's future and blah, blah, blah. Didn't even think, actually, he's nicked Kudus' celebration.
Yeah.
But so coming back to the point, Tony, about... you know, orchestrated, pre-planned celebrations.
Yeah.
Any teammates or in any dressing rooms for a bit of that?
Well, I mean, I've witnessed ones that only you could describe. I mean, Adebayor doing the length of the pitch against Arsenal when he was a Man City, you know? I mean, there's no way on earth he's thought, if I score against these, I'm going to...
No, that's just euphoric. Yeah. I'm talking about you more kind of like, you know, the shine the shoes and all that kind of stuff, the kind of joyful, daft ones. One of the great all-time ones for me is South Africa's first goal in their World Cup when they were hosting and the dance moves after Shabalala. But that so it then leads me on to a thing about, which Martin touched on before, kind of joy and exuberance against the kind of cool Cristiano Ronaldo-esque. Because speaking about Manchester United, we mentioned Kobbi Mainoo and that brilliant goal that he scored against Wolves. The only bad thing I found about it was that he did the kind of calm down, you know, I'm cool as out here. I was just thinking, you're 18, lad. You've just scored in the 97th minute.
Well, Thierry Henry used to do that, and there was no footballer that brought more joy, really, than Thierry Henry, but he used to be a big one for putting his hands, finger to his lips and stuff, and you think, oh, come on, mate, run around a bit. And smile, you know.
I think we are getting dangerously close to being the celebration police here now.
Oh, no, we absolutely are. We absolutely are. I didn't agree with Martin before when he said we're not the celebration police. I was like,
I was actually a bit different about Mainoo as well. I thought, crikey, I jumped around like an absolute fool, and like, and look back and you go, oh my god, that felt like he was like, yeah, I belong here.
Yeah, I know there's an element of I belong here, but
he was right up to the fans afterwards.
True. So maybe, like, I'm being harsh.
Yeah, I don't know. Someone like Mopai, it's like, he's clearly, he's every minute he's on the pitch, he wants to wind up the opposition. Yeah. He thinks he can get a benefit from it. Often he does. People kick him. People, like, you know, he winds people up. It's like we did with Walker. There's no limits.
No.
See, that is usually it works. Mm. That's the truth. But it backfired against Spurs. So you don't mind Mopay.
You're going to get beat by Man City, whether you wind up Kyle Walker or not. Yeah. But
think of Mopay and what players has probably said to him when he's doing what he did at Spurs, and you know, and players has on the pitch for Everton. You know, your period at Everton, it literally brought up on the pitch to him. You were so and so at Everton, and you already feel like he's got a bit of an advantage. He does love doing it. Hmm. I worked with Natalie Sawyer, and she's knows Mopay from Brentford days, and she's interviewed him. Mm. Said, oh, he loves really unsettling the opposition. Yeah. He really gets better, and he's good at it.
Mm. Yeah. The old Wimbledon team did. I'm trying to remember who was the fullback, the one who broke
Terry Phelan?
No, the fellow who broke his leg and went off pretending to row it like a canoe. He was one of the original crazy gang. Broke his leg. He's being carried off on a stretcher, and he sits up in the stretcher and starts doing that.
Scousy,
as if he's running a... It's earlier. But he turns round to Phil Thompson at Anfield and, you know, looks at him, keeps staring at him, and Thompson says, what? And he's looked at him, he's gone, I tell you what, mate, Walt Disney couldn't draw your face. and stuff like this.
Martin, Euro 96, Paul Gascoigne, the dentist
chair. Oh, that was definitely, that was...
One of the all-time iconic ones. Yeah, and also
that was planned, obviously.
In terms of riposte.
He's shouting him to get the water bottle or whatever. Yeah, he was shouting.
How was that perceived at the time?
At the time, look, we'd just beaten Scotland. We were back into it. We played really well in the second half.
He'd scored a hell of a goal.
He scored a hell of a goal.
I could tell you how it was perceived in Scotland.
Yeah. do you know what I mean? So you can't take yourself too seriously. I mean, obviously, that's a dig at all the people who criticise England over their behaviour in Hong Kong or whatever. But you can't take yourself too seriously about it. So, you know, that they've won. They've got themselves back into it. They played really, really well. I can't remember.
Didn't go down badly.
It didn't go down badly.
We also mentioned, like, the thing that's really sparked us was, like, Odegaard and Arsenal after the win.
Yeah.
You know, getting a camera and, like, how jubilant they were. And that's, people seem to be really, it's almost, you know, and there's the thing about the team photos afterwards in the changing room and stuff now. Like, I don't know why people are angered by that.
No,
like,
did you it's have the idea that you can be too happy that I don't agree.
But I guess the kind of lazy sum up of Jamie Carragher's argument was that, you know, it's the middle of the season, you've not won anything yet, which is what the kind of pragmatists would say. But, you know, in your playing days, if you'd won a big game, would the celebrations be slightly bigger than if you'd just, you know, got a point or whatever against
us? Yeah, of course. But you know, a lot of the guys that are making these arguments were like serial winners. They're played for clubs where winning those games, those big games, was like a habit. And then so they want to kind of project this image of, like, real professionalism. It's like, this is what we should be doing. Mm. Arsenal aren't there yet. Mm. Like, and so maybe he's, you know, his argument is to get there, this is part of it. I'm not sure. I think just win more of those games and you probably see a little less exuberant celebrations.
Over 95% of you, go back to the music side, don't have number ones. Yeah. So, okay, so when you're a footballer, high 90s, don't win things. Mm. Mm. You know, so there is a road to winning. And if, you know, I knew a lot of the Wimbledon boys, and when they won the FA Cup against Liverpool, you know, they celebrated bigger and better than anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, and you knew that before the game. They were celebrating before the game. Yeah. Like, because they were just trying to unsettle you.
Yeah.
But they were brilliant at it. And that's why all of them, nearly to a man, ended up having big moves in their career.
I also think there's more like, this is not to say anything about football of the past, but there's more goes into like a game plan for every single game now. Mm. If you think about, you know, read Hamza's piece about the sort of the hybrid pressing, the way their game plan was very clear about the way that they tried to stop Liverpool, and it worked. You know, they've spent all week working on the same the same patterns of play and the same, you know, pressing triggers and all that kind of stuff.
Well, quick, can you imagine?
It's just some, I don't know, I think the culmination of a week's work and a big performance, let them enjoy it.
High-fiving defenders for making a clearance.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we, in our day, we would never have done that.
No.
You know, everybody high-fiving, you know, you might go, well done, and that's about it. But now you're seeing literally high-fiving when they make a great challenge.
Big tackle, big clearance off the line. You must have given it big licks, wouldn't you, for a big... Big goal saving tackle,
little ruffle of the hair.
This is a modern, thing. This sort of now that everyone is far more in tuned into the psychological side of it,
and it's American sport.
It's all of, you know. You watch England play cricket. Every single time someone puts back to ball, they meet up in the middle and they fist bump. Well done. I'm thinking it's a forward defensive. What are you talking about? Well, but it's a little fist bump. Keep going, mate. And that's modern. That is modern sport. And the celebration stuff. And oh, it's too early. You always get, it's like people who say to you when you write something, oh, you know, why don't we wait till the end of the season? Because Man City are going to win it and stuff like that. And go, all right, then what I'll do with the column next week will be a big blank space, and it'll be what Martin's going to do, and he's going to wait 4 months, see who wins the league, and then tell you that they've won the league, and that you know. That he could have seen that, and that's not what.
Enjoy the journey.
The journey is the thing. So after every game, you're sort of formulating an opinion. You're changing this. You're fine tuning that. Well, this looks as if this could, you know, this way. You don't sit there and go, all right, well, you know, no one celebrates a goal until May the 18th. When we all see where everyone's finished, and then you celebrate
in accordance of position in the table.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know,
so 12 is a little,
you know,
clap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
6 you can get a few drinks in. Only beers though.
Yeah, if you come rock bottom,
down,
you just
have to be head.
Yeah, head down.
Yeah, rock bottom, you just keep slapping yourself on the forehead. You know, all the way down the tunnel. You know,
I think we're onto something.
Yeah, look, if when we're kids and we have this a lot, where you go to the schools, everyone's getting a medal for everything. I've done presentations in my latter years of my career, and everyone in the world's got a medal. And I think, well, when you're a pro, surely we can all celebrate when we have great times on the pitch.
Absolutely. Mm. Well, speaking of, you mentioned that journey can go to lots of different clubs. And so the one I wanted to finish on, as we've turned into the celebration police, we might as well own it now for at least 20 minutes.
But we're not arresting anybody. This is the thing. Just warnings. Some of the celebration police want people arrested.
Just,
you know,
warnings. But the one I wanted to finish on is scoring against your former club. And Tony, I'm going to come to you last because I know you've got a story. Martin, any views on the whole, no, I couldn't possibly?
Yeah, I do think some of it is a little bit ridiculous. You know, you've got someone who won't celebrate against a club he was on bloody loan at, and you know, you think, mate, you're only here 2 months.
Gregor,
you know,
do you ever celebrate?
I agree, if there's like...
Because you played, you know, lots of different clubs. You must have played against
Dennis
your
Law
former
not
club.
Celebrating against Manchester United
exactly.
at that time.
That's the point,
I can get that. I can understand that.
Got a huge association with a club, like,
and he's relegated them.
Yeah, and he's relegated
for their rivals.
Yeah,
I mean, but that's the bar. But that's their bar, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's the bar. I think so. I mean,
but you must have played against your former teams before, haven't you? By playing in the football league.
We've discussed already. I think you've highlighted how many goals I scored.
No, but you might have been involved in celebrating for a teammate or whatever, you know, being involved in the celebrations, or did you ever consciously go, no, I'm just going to show my respect to crew in Northampton here, I'm going to keep my head down.
No, but as I say, if there's a club you have a really long association with and deep ties, then I could understand why someone would do that. But otherwise, God, no. Yeah, I agree. Like, I remember Levi Colwell against Brighton earlier in the season, and he actually started hearing off. He was like, "Oh, because he didn't score often." He's like, "Yes," and then, "Oh, wait there, sorry." And he put his hands up.
I think of all the different newspapers. I think of all the different newspapers I've worked for. If I scored against the Sunday People, I don't think I'd celebrate because they're in enough trouble already, and they gave me my first job, and you know, they were fantastic. If I scored against the Daily Express, I'd go nuts.
So speaking of going nuts against your former team, Tony Cascarino, you Millwall,
yeah, playing for Villa. I left Millwall, and what fans don't know is that you know, what happened me leading up to going to Villa, I was basically, the fee was agreed and I went back to the club. I didn't agree with Villa straight away. Went back and I was there a week and I got called into the secretary, Graham Halltop, and he said to me, you've got to go to Villa. We need the money. We need you to go. And I said, OK. And they ended up offering me some money to go to put the package together that I asked for. So I go to Villa and we play Millwall in the cup at Villa Park. And it's 0-0, and every time I get the ball, I'm hearing Judah shouts, you know what I mean? I'm thinking, it went on for about 45 minutes to an hour. Anyway, I scored, didn't I, against Millwall. And I've gone straight at the Millwall fans.
Full Adebayor.
Not as bad as that. Nowhere near as bad as that. I'm literally giving it back, like, because I've been called Judas all game, and like, this is, you know, I'm thinking, well, they wanted me to go. They also, you know, they are... put me, you
so
know,
what you're giving
there.
It and there you go, you nasty
so-and-sos.
So I'm
waving all the fists and giving, there was a few signs at me and whatever, and I'm giving
finger
it back
wagging.
Then as I'm doing it, I'm thinking, you idiot, your family are from South London. Right, I'm there a lot, and I'm also, a lot of people remember that, and probably not the best fans to do it to in front. So I've sort of calmed myself down, but it was at that time a bit of a tricky one. Yeah. I mean, I did it for Nancy against Marseille, and I thought I was going to get a brilliant reception and didn't.
No,
I thought they were going to be fine with me scoring. Mm. You know, not, okay, they don't want me to score, but I didn't think I'd get the reaction I got from Marseille fans to me. You know, me scoring against their club, which was quite a surprise. But I didn't go nowhere near as far as I did with Millwall.
It's well, all part of the theatre, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. Well, if you want to be part of the theatre and give us some views on celebrating, or maybe you're a Millwall fan who still hasn't forgiven Tony Cascarino for leaving.
I know, they're all good now. They're all good. I've made it up.
They'll still be the odd one out there. You might have sparked some memories telling that story. You can get in touch with me, tom.clark@thetimes.co.uk, and we might read out some ideas on Monday's show. But stick with us. We're going to be talking about cooling off periods and Jesse Lingard next.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. I'm Tom Clark, and today I'm joined by Martin Samuel, Tony Cascarino and Gregor Robertson. Hope you enjoyed that little break. You could call it a cooling off period, which leads me perfectly onto Martin Ziegler's story in The Times this week, which is headlined, referees could be allowed to enforce cooling off periods. A potential law change will be discussed by IFAB next month in a bid to improve participant behaviour, with a sin bin trial set to be approved. It's that time of the year again. More ideas, how to change football. Martin? Cooling off periods.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
before we throw it to the former pros.
I think this one's nonsense. Look, some of the ideas, sin bins, I've long been an advocate of sin bins, specifically for dissent.
Right.
Where you don't really want to change the numbers of the game for too long over dissent. But if you're 10 minutes stood next to your manager, particularly if you go 1-0 down during that period, I don't think that's something you're going to be doing, you know, next week or the week after. I think it would stop it. One that never gets discussed, which I would definitely be in favour of, is what they call the self-pass rule. It happens in hockey, it happens in rugby. You can put the ball down instead of having to pass to for a free kick. You can put the ball down instead of having to pass to one of your team. You can just put it down and play it yourself. You can run with it. And that, if you see it work in hockey, it cuts out dissent overnight because you can't start arguing with the referee because the game's going to go on. So, you know, the minute the referee blows for a foul, you'll just get back into position. And it doesn't greatly alter the game because once the team gets back into position, you can't get that far with a self-pass. People say, oh, someone will just stand in front of the ball. If you stand in front of the ball, you get sent to the sin bin. So you're off the field for 10 minutes. So it all links and it all makes this joined up, coherent structure for out of discipline a game. I'm not quite sure a cooling off period where everyone's just basically cramping up for 2 minutes whilst staring each other out and saying, right, we're ready to go in another 2 minutes. And, you know, I'm not sure that necessary, unless the cooling off period is where everyone goes to the bar and has a couple of beers together and then makes up and then comes out again. That works.
Just to come in on that point, in Martin Ziegler's story, it says the exact length of the cooling off period is still under discussion, but lasting a number of minutes with players separated by match officials into different areas. It's like, I've never had kids, but it's the whole, go to your naughty step.
Does a ref not already try and do that when there's they're coming together, whatever?
You get the captains together, don't you? And you say, tell your players to calm down or whatever the conversation is, or he gets the two players who've just had a brawl fight or whatever together and calm down and shake hands or whatever. And that happens it just seems unnecessary. There's much easier things you can do that don't alter the structure of the game. Plus, how long before the cooling off period gets sponsored by, cool off with,
air conditioning
or something
company.
Like an air conditioning unit or whatever. And, it breaks for adverts and stuff. And then, you begin to suspect that the referees are actually told to put in a cooling off period because they've just sold the advertising for however much.
We're a cynical podcast.
Oh, we're a very cynical podcast.
I can see it, though. That's the thing.
We can all see it.
That's the way it comes from. Gregor, cooling off period? Ever been in a game when it would have been useful?
Yeah, of course. But as I say, I don't see what... The cooling off period would come after people have been cooled down a bit, I think. Because the referee still has to intervene if there's, a brawl or something. Once that's happened, then you say, we're having a cooling off period. Like, well, I think we're probably cooled off now. Thanks, ref. I don't really see what the... I agree with Martin. The sin bin is interesting. It's something I would like to see explored further. But I need to see the other two kind of things in Martin's piece about they're going to say that a penalty now has... The ball has to cover or shadow the centre of the penalty spot. What?
Feels like law changes for the sake of it.
Sanitise the game, basically.
No, I mean,
in many different ways.
We've had this discussion before. How many laws there are, and they're going to make
more
deliberate handball in the box, a straight red card. I think the laws need to be simplified.
Yeah.
We don't need to keep adding these layers and
layers.
It's your catchphrase
for when you run for the presidency of IFAB, Gregor.
Simplify. Bonfire of regulations.
Simplify. But no, so, Tony, in terms of your say on the kind of cooling off period, presumably not a fan.
Well, no, my love of football is that it's always been controversial, sometimes toxic, sometimes horrible, sometimes embarrassing. It's the number one sport in the world. And if we keep going down this road of sanitising it to a degree of every little thing, yes, there are problems within the game. And I'm quite happy with a sin bin scenario of get off the pitch and you're off. Football will react. Coaches will react. Players will react to the laws that you're making. And if they can find an advantage, they will. But I don't want to get away from the love of the game that I always felt. Yeah, there are things wrong with it, but you don't want a perfect system in football, do we?
Sin bin's been a huge success in amateur ranks, and it's been tested.
How long would you have a sin bin for? Would you have a set time, or would it be judged maximum 10 minutes, 5 minutes? What would you think?
Ten minutes seems quite a long time.
A lot can happen in 10 minutes.
Yeah, but simplify. So if it's 10 minutes, it's 10 minutes. It's got to be a proper deterrent. If it's 5 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever.
But there is an issue, Martin, with this as well. Is that if it's a 10 minute, obviously punishment. Now, are the opposition going to slow the game down to enable their player to get on quicker. Mm. You know, this is how I'm thinking, how coaches will think and players on the pitch will think. If he's off for 10 minutes and it's now 6 minutes, slow down, walk to the take the throw in and, you know, well, then, as slow as you can.
Then,
so he gets,
of course,
or you stop in the game.
But then it's got to all be joined up.
Exactly.
So time wasting becomes an issue. It works in other sports. It works in rugby. It works in hockey. Hockey has a green, yellow, red card system. You've really got to do something bad in hockey to get a red card. See, this is the other thing, that once you've got a sin bin, you sort of bring that level, you know, a red card becomes much more serious if you've got a sin bin, because you've got other options. Now, I'm talking about making it just for dissent, but I know that they're talking about making it for some other offences as well. Well, the more you spread that out, the more a red card becomes. See, I think if you get a red in hockey, you're quite probably not coming back for 2 months, because there are so many other stages of punishment that you can get to avoid getting a red card, that is really reserved for something very, very serious, and you're probably out for 2 months. You're probably banned for 2 months, because they don't even have... You can get two sin bins in hockey, because you can be sin binned for a certain offence, and then you can be sin binned for another offence. It doesn't add to a totting up thing. It's not like two yellows make a red in hockey. You can get two yellows and come back on the field. So a red card becomes, one, absolutely last resort, and two, once you've been sent off, you know, you've crossed a line. You're not playing for 2 months.
I would only have it for dissent.
For dissent, yeah, that would be my...
Because that just adds more layers of subjectivity about what constitutes a... So, if it's not quite a red card, okay, we'll sin bin them for, like, if we're talking about tackles and stuff, no way.
You get VAR in the sin bin on the dissent. So, can we have the lip readers in, please?
The main point to say is that, like, there seem to be trying to explore all these different avenues that will give a referee another option, another sort of weapon.
Mm.
Because... Every year or every few years, there's a directive about if you surround surround the referee, if you swear at the ref, whatever, you're booked. And we're seeing it actually to managers this season. It has, they have actually, bared their teeth. But it always fades away. The referees never, after a period of time, have the kind of...
Do you think it's faded away?
To continue booking.
Definitely been more bookings, I think. Even going to watch, like, Lincoln games and things. Far more bookings. We've had a lot of, like, second yellow, red cards.
Like, I think it fades. I think from the start of the season, it's faded.
Do you think? Interesting.
Well, maybe we should explore that.
Maybe we'll have a look at it. Coming to a Times article near you sometime soon. Tony, you were going to say...
Well, no, I was going to say that the problem is what we talk about in 2.24, in 2.34, the rules are going to be much softer.
Mm.
And you can get punished even harsher. You know, and that's what bothers me, because I've always said, well, penalties 10 years ago, think of 10 penalties, what are they going to be in 10 years' time? If we're giving pence for this now, what are they going to be in 2034? And that's going to be the same with laws, that we're just going to make them so soft that not doing hardly anything wrong can get you a yellow card. Mm.
In terms of changing these laws, and Gregor, you kind of touched on it there by giving referees more teeth, do you think this would help or hinder refereeing further down the pyramid and into the amateur game, in terms of, you know, on the park or whatever, the idea you could sin bin someone for telling you to F off?
I think it already has helped. I think, as I say, there's been trials and it's been shown to be a huge success. And I can understand even the cooling off thing being different, because there's not TV cameras. There's not the eyes of thousands of people on what's going on in the pitch. So, you know, it might be the referees have to say, right, guys, separate, go back into your own areas. But still, as I say, I think that's what they're trying to. That's what they try and do when something kicks off, anyway. So, it's not something I'm really hugely supportive of.
We're almost trying for a level of perfection in all areas of football, whether it's the balance sheet or whether it's, you're almost setting sort of quite unrealistic targets. I can remember a pal of mine who is a lawyer talking to. We were talking about, you know, racism in football and everything. And he said, you know, one of the problems is the FA's ambition for racism in football. So zero tolerance, he was talking about. He said, but it's more than zero tolerance. It's like zero racism. What we're aiming for is zero racism. And he said, well, that can only ever be defeated. He said, because you're never going to get zero racism. He said, you always look as if you failed if you set zero as your target. And it's not like you say, oh, we'll tolerate, you know, 5% of racism. It's not a case of what you tolerate. But if you say our target is zero, he said, it only needs one person at one football match to shout something out and the policy's failed. Mm. He said, so, you know, you always feel like you're failing. You always feel like you're fighting this losing battle. And it, in many ways, it's a similar sort of thing with what we want football to be, because you want this perfect game where every decision is completely right and everything works absolutely swimmingly and no club ever gets in trouble and no club ever... And you're thinking, this is completely unachievable. You know, someone is going to mess up. Someone is going to get their sums wrong and make a mistake in the transfer market and it's going to get relegated and they won't be able to sustain what they're doing. That will happen. Someone will make a mistake. This will go... You know, we've got VAR and the Tottenham-Liverpool game showed that VAR, if someone in the VAR room makes a mistake or mishears something or misinterprets or isn't paying attention, that can go wrong. No matter how many television cameras you can point at an incident, it can still go wrong. So we are aiming for these lofty, beyond lofty ideals that... It will always feel as if football is failing as a sport if you don't allow some tiny, tiny, make some tiny, tiny allowance for someone just making a mistake.
My least favourite word, example, is my least favourite word because you can give an example of anything.
Yeah, bankrupt.
In one example of anything, like what Martin's talking there about being zero, there's always one example.
Mm.
And that's why I... Because we could bring up something and someone will reference this happened in 1956. Mm. You know, how much relevance has it got on a general basis over the course of thousands of games?
Yeah. Well, speaking of examples, let's talk about a footballer.
You're going to interrupt me again when I'm doing a lovely link with another one of your perfectly crafted links. we will do a greatest hits show at the end of the year, listeners, where it's just links. There's no Greg or Tony or myself. It will just be Tom's links. You know, for the
Tom
Doc
Clark at the Times, if you want.
If you want the Tom's links show, but precedent is another thing where people go, oh well, this sets a precedent, and you go, yeah, but that's a really bad precedent to set. So why can't we just look at that and think, yeah. We can either keep doing that, which we now know was a total mistake, or we can just go, we made a really bad mistake about 10 years ago. We're not going to do that again, boys and girls. We're going to do the complete opposite, even though that's inconsistent, because what we did before was wrong, you know.
The penalty spot...
No, you're going as well now, for God's sake.
The penalty spot is like a perfect analogy for the overthought, the overthinkingness going on in IFAB.
Yeah.
That they think a law is necessary for where on the penalty spot, which is how big?
Yeah.
Where the ball has to be on the penalty spot.
Mm.
That's the perfect example. There you go, Tony.
Yeah.
Of the madness at IFAB.
Yeah, because everyone's sitting around basically thinking,
how can we improve the game?
How can we do? Well, yeah, what can we do? You've got
by
to be
by overthinking how you try and improve it, they make it worse.
Because if IFAB, they say, right, so, you know, what could be done to improve the game? If everyone in IFAB turned around and went, actually, it's pretty good. It's pretty good as it is. It's lasted about 150 years, exactly as it is. No problem at all, really. You know, they go, all right, well, no one's getting any expenses for the next year for all these meetings, and no one's being put up in any hotels because you've come up with nothing. So they've got to keep coming up with stuff. Going,
lucky they're not doing this
do
podcast.
This?
Right, right, right.
Yeah, Tony. Exactly. You know.
Ready?
Yeah.
Anyway, good points, lads. Moving on.
Yeah.
I can't be bothered.
So, yeah,
Jesse Lingard,
exactly.
Discuss.
Jesse, no cares.
Over to you. See if I give a fuck.
Yeah. He's been working on puns.
I put four. We said shit four times on Monday show, and now I've gone for a fuck as well. See if we can really get into it.
Oh, no, this will get the show cancelled.
Jesse Lingard, everybody. Yeah. He's completed his move to South Korean side FC Seoul, making him the highest profile player in the league, as Charlotte Dunker reports on the Times website. I wanted to finish with a discussion on him. Fascinating player that he is, and his career trajectory. 2018. He's a star for England in their midfield, wearing the number 7 shirt that many greats have graced down the years. What's happened, and what do we think about his career and where it's gone? Still 31, flies into South Korea this week, believed to have signed a 2-year deal in the region of £17,000 a week. Interesting that in Charlotte's story, she references not only a desire from Lingard to grow the game over there, but also
the prospect of playing in East Asia
might help him grow his own brand and business, with the possibility of expanding into fashion and the restaurant industry. Martin, you'd have watched Jesse Lingard a lot for England, Manchester United, and then for West Ham, of course. What kind of a player do you think he is, was, and has he kind of, you know, not fulfilled his potential?
Well, let's first of all start with the Korean restaurant and fashion industry.
Yes.
Because
that's the key part of this.
They seem to be doing quite well on their own. I don't know if anyone's ever noticed this about Korean restaurants, but they're everywhere. Korean food is regarded as one of the most cutting-edge things. Kimchi and all of the pickle-related stuff, all of that gut health thing is the most fashionable thing in cooking at the moment. You can't move in restaurants for pickle this and pickle that. All being influenced by Korea. Their fashion industry is absolutely sensational.
Yeah.
They've got their own pop culture, the K-pop phenomenon. They don't necessarily need, all due respect to Jesse Lingard, a bloke who couldn't get in Nottingham Forest team coming over there and showing them all how to do it.
Now, maybe it's more that he wants to piggyback off that success that you have outlined.
Now, that is possible. But to return to your earlier point about football. Jesse Lingard was a Manchester United player. Manchester United players get marked really, really closely. Hard for them to get in the game. When he went to West Ham, he had a run at West Ham. I think he scores 9 goals in 10 games when he first gets to West Ham, because people aren't marking West Ham players as tightly as they're marking, you know, the amount of games that Manchester United play where everyone's all over them, trying to restrict them, 10 men behind the ball, and you know how people play the best teams, Kaz. And so he had that all of his career, goes to West Ham, gets a bit of freedom, looked absolutely fantastic. Unfortunately, 9 goals in 10 games shows your hand a little bit, that you're a very useful player if somebody would just leave you alone. And he didn't score for West Ham the rest of that season, because suddenly everyone was playing him like he was a Manchester United player again. I always thought he was a fabulous player for England, and so did Gareth Southgate. And I could absolutely understand why Southgate picked him even when he wasn't a regular always at Manchester United, because he never let England down. He turned up in matches, he scored goals. I thought he was excellent. He lost his way. He went to Nottingham Forest. It wasn't the best move. I think West Ham would have taken him back. David Moyes would have taken him back, I think. I personally thought it had caught up with him at West Ham. You know, that people knew what a threat he could be in that West Ham team. He goes to Nottingham Forest. It didn't work at Nottingham Forest. He's been, you know, went to Saudi. You know, didn't get taken on after the trial with Saudi. And you stories about him training with Barcelona and all of this sort of stuff, and ends up in South Korea. It's a shame. He's a better player than South Korea League, I think.
In terms of that point that Martin's making, Gregor, about kind of being pinpointed a little bit, do you think that was part of the problem that when he went to Forest? Because, you know, he's very much the kind of poster boy of the spending that summer, given a huge contract. When it came to then playing, he was seen as the star boy of that team in attack. Was that part of the problem why it didn't work, do you think?
Yeah, the injuries. I mean, I think you'll look back now and regret. It's presumptuous of me to say that, but you look back and he had a few offers on the table. Forrest was clearly the biggest, and it was only a year, but I think he probably went there with quite a bit of confidence after the West Ham end of the season, saying, if I have a good season here, then the next step, you know, there could be another big step. And it just hasn't worked out that way. So I think you know, he might look back and think that was a mistake. I think he sacked his agents recently because there was also, you know, as Martin alluded to, there was a failure to get a few other potential deals over the line. But I'm always, you know, having just said that, I'm always slightly wary about us sitting here and talking about wasted potential because, you know, you do it about people like Gareth Bale.
Mm.
Like, I don't... And also, some of the choices that he makes in his, you know, personal life, or some of the things he's also gone through as well, I think, having, you know, if you look beneath it a bit, you know, life's not straightforward. It's not all, you know, you can't always have 100% focus on football. Only the very, very best do that.
Absolutely.
And he's not, you know, he showed glimpses of that. And, you know, he was always, just because of his sort of social media persona, someone that people were very, very quick to try and drag back down to earth about. Remember when he signed his £100,000 a week deal at United and everybody thought that was like, what? You know, that seemed, you know, that's commonplace now, but when he signed that, it was like, how's Jesse Lingard getting £100,000 a week?
Mm.
He's always been someone that people have tried to drag back down to earth. There'll be some people who will be kind of taking a bit of pleasure in seeing him going out to South Korea. He's made the choices he has, and maybe and you know, he has other things that he's interested in away from football. And if he wanted to balance it up with how much dedication, or, and I'm not saying he's not being dedicated, but with, you know, balancing up football and the rest of his life, that's up to him.
See, there's I think you get choices sometimes, and you have to be, look, football is always going to give you money. If you're doing well and playing well, there's loads of people in football who are going to give you loads of money. That's just the going rate. It's just obvious whether you're at a club that you're at or someone who's wanting you. I remember Robbie Keane going to Inter Milan at 18, 19. And I said to Robbie in the room when we was together with Ireland, I said, why did you choose Inter? I said, I thought it was a strange choice to him because he was such a young man. I thought, one day Inter's a great move, but at 18. And he said, well, tell that to my bank manager. And I remember thinking, that's a really bad answer.
Mm.
Because Jesse Lingard chose money over the right move. David Moyes wanted him. And the fact that he had a good time, as Martin's alluded to, when he was there and in goals and that, David Moyes wanted him and knew how to get the best out of him. I think that's when you need to take control and go, whatever I do, I make this move not about money, because you're going to get rewarded anyway. You're going to get a decent contract.
But it's easy to presume that, though, because, like, if you're getting a three-year offer on X at West Ham or Newcastle, whoever it was, Fulham, I think. There's a few teams interested in him. It's 3 years. He was getting one year at Forest. So he still, actually, as I say,
yeah,
he still had to back himself. I know money, like the immediacy of that's a bigger deal, but there was less security and now it's backfired. So, you know, I'm not...
Okay, I'd say to you, the Forest deal, I guarantee you, would have been a one-year deal, and if they stay up, he'd have got a huge payment. Okay? That's how generally them deals work, where... You know, he's on that shorter term deal, and probably if it goes well, if I'm getting this payment to stay up, because lots of them do get that now, that also he'll be in a great bargaining position at the end of the season.
Yeah.
My point was more to do with about playing well. You know, if you go to West Ham and Moyes, I think he should have gone back there. Now, I can't tell any player where to go. I made choices in my own career that I'd look back and think were probably a bad idea at that time.
Which one?
You know which one. I made the choice to go to Celtic when
did you have
it
all,
was a
you
great
had all
club
offers.
At the wrong time for me.
Did
and
you
I
had
chose
other
it
offers?
Over money. Oh, yeah, I had Southampton.
Right.
I could have gone to Southampton. It was the right deal for me at that particular time. And I ended up choosing Celtic. I knew Liam Brady, knew him well. I knew the agent because Finton, who had worked with Liam. So it all fitted together as in this could be a bit good move. It failed miserably. And it failed miserably because of me. More than anybody, because I didn't play well. But I knew, as soon as I got to Barrowfield, the training ground of Celtic at the time, I knew on the very first day I'd made a mistake. Okay? Now, this is where I think you have to think money out of the equation. Of course, it's important to a degree, but I think Jesse's definitely got himself in this position of why he's ended up in South Korea. You know, now he's a forgotten man, and okay, he might be the Messiah and get all his followers and whatever in Korea. And I just find it, I thought at the time it was a very strange move to go to Forest with that 1 year deal and ending. And I think from the agent's perspective, they were going, get another big move next summer.
It'd be fascinating.
So he's already gone there with the idea of beyond next summer, not about keeping Forest up or playing a big part in that season. It's about, well, if it don't work here, we still won't be on China 1 year deal.
Yeah, we will see what the future holds for Jesse Lingard. Chaps, thank you very much. Fascinating and varied debate with a couple of links thrown in, Martin, as well.
Yeah, yeah. I was really impressed with the links. I mean, that's the only reason that's the only reason I ever tune into this program, yeah, just for the links.
Really. Yeah, he loved it, really. Martin Samuel, Tony Cascarino and Gregor Robertson, thank you very much for joining me. Thank you, too, for listening. We'll be back on Monday with the reaction to the best of the weekend's action.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.